Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive contribution to the world with their transformational thoughts, ideas, and activities. We'll explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, physical, mental, relationship, and many, many more. My name is Tom Too Tall Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor and also a regular contributor to their weekly e-zine. I recently spoke at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention, sharing this stage with Deepak Chopra. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since age 5, that's 43 years now, and I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced and been in hospital about 40 times. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication that is the official and only media partner with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website. It's Tom, the number 2, and tall, T-A-L-L.com. My guest today is Mark Hunter, the sales hunter. Before embarking on being an independent consultant, Mark spent 18 years in the sales and marketing divisions of 3 Fortune 100 companies. The skills he learned then were too good to keep to himself. Mark now travels nationally and internationally 240 days a year, working with global leaders like Coca-Cola, Kawasaki, Sara Lee, Mattel, Unilever, and Godiva. He is known for his high-energy presentations that result in measurable ROI for his clients. That's what it really all comes down to. This isn't simply about marketing or making a sales staff feel motivated. It's about equipping them with skills and approaches that really bring results. When he is not busy with clients, Mark writes extensively, not only on his own blog, but also articles for numerous sales-related websites. Business people from nearly 50 countries visit his website daily, making his insights applicable to markets around the world. He also sends a weekly sales tip to thousands of subscribers. Mark is also the author of the book High Profit Selling, Win the Sale Without Compromising on Price, which is available on Amazon. Welcome to the show today, Mark.
Hey, thank you for having me on today.
I am a follower of yours online. I'm a subscriber to your blog, and I will be purchasing your book in the next few days as well. And so I really thank you for taking the time to join us today. Mark, I always start, because of my Napoleon Hill affiliation, I always ask people first when you first read Think and Grow Rich, and who introduced you to the book? Because often those are important people in our life as well.
Well, it was a very important person. It was my father. My father
nice.
Was a yeah. It was he introduced it to me when I was just a kid. I think I probably introduced myself to it by just stumbling through his office. He had an office at home and a study and a number of books, and it was one of those books that I just picked up and walked out and said, "Dad, what's this all about? Think and Grow Rich." You know, when you see that as a kid, you go, "Wow, ooh, the eyes."
Yeah. Light.
And it was absolutely fascinating, because he shared with me, and I still remember it very, very well. He shared with me some of the things that he took out of the book, and he really helped me to understand that when we talk about growing rich, it's not a monetary aspect, but really we truly grow rich in people. And it was very interesting, because as I watched my own father, he went through a number of ups and downs in his life, and it was very easy. It would have been very easy for him to become very negative, because he went through some very difficult struggles in his business. And yet there was a guy who was always up. He was always up and always game on. And you know what?
Nice.
You know, there were a lot of reasons to it. He had a very strong faith, but I'll tell you what, he had a firm belief in Napoleon Hill. And so I got introduced to it young, and I've stuck with Napoleon Hill ever since.
Oh, wow, and what a great way to learn it from parents. One of my mastermind members and one of my coworkers, Milos, he did the same thing as you. His mom had it on her bookshelf. And he happened at age 15 to pick it off and read it. And then to be able for your dad to share it with you and share some of the principles, that really creates a great bond as well. I'm sure you learn more about it, more about the book and the principles learning from your dad than maybe you would from other, if other people had introduced it to you.
Well, and what is interesting is the principles and the values that I learned from my father, I didn't really learn until years later. You know, it's things that he said, things that he shared, things that I saw him do that really that had no meaning at the time. But now, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years later, ooh, wow.
Exactly. As we grow older, we learn to really adapt these principles, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now you recently came out with your own book, High Profit Selling. And my father, he was in the explosives business for all his career, always in sales. He always said sales is the only position that adds profit to the company. Everyone else is an expense. But he was most known and always even preached to me, even when I didn't even know what he was talking about sometimes, about selling on value. Because in the explosives business, you bid on contracts. And he would rarely be the lowest bidder. But his company got bought out because he won so many contracts from bigger companies just on the value-added, him being value-added, the services he provided. And so I really love the gist of that book, Win the Sale Without Compromising on Price. Your book talks a lot about that. Give our listeners a few pointers about how they can win those contracts without necessarily being the lowest price provider.
Let me share with you a couple of thoughts and a couple of ideas. One of them I love to say, and I heard this from a very astute Canadian businessman. He shared with me, he said sometimes the most profitable business you'll ever get is the business you don't get. And it was interesting because it was in a discussion I was having with this gentleman. And he made the comment, you know, sometimes we get into these negotiations, we get into these bids and these, you know, and we wind up having a race to the seller, a race to see how low we can get it. And, you know, you really have to stop and take a step back and say, is this business really worth having? Excuse me. And I love that expression. Sometimes the most profitable business you'll ever get is the stuff you don't get. And what I really believe by that is this. If I can't achieve the business at what I believe is my margin, my profit that I have to be at, I shouldn't be going after it. Because the most critical aspect, and this is something that your father learned very early on, I'm sure, in his career, because he said, hey, you know, in the explosives business, you can just keep, you know, trying to go cheaper and cheaper and cheaper with the price, but it's not going to get you anywhere. He said it's the value. It's what he brings to the table. The most critical aspect, the most critical attribute in any business is the salesperson's time, is the time that the company has to be able to spend with the customer. And what I'll say in this, when I talk about getting high profit selling, do we really understand what the needs are of the customer? One of the things that I love to share when I'm talking with groups, I'll say is, if you think about this for a moment, the customer that tries to get you down on price and get you down on price, and occasionally you'll roll over and you'll give them that lower price. Well, you know what will happen?
Mm.
That person who tries to get you down on price is going to be the same type of person that's going to nag you and nag you and nag you throughout the duration of the contract. It's always the case. If the customer doesn't see the value, don't go with them. It's not worth it. There are other customers out there. And that's another big problem. Too many times people get into this thing, well, I got to cut my price because if I don't get this, I don't create the cash flow, I don't create this. Well, then what you really have is you have a prospecting problem. You haven't set your pipeline up. You haven't set your marketing plan up enough to give you enough value-added prospects with which to be going after, because probably what you're doing is you're chasing suspects and not prospects.
Yes, yes. And I recently read Jeffrey Gittimer's Little Red Book of Selling. He talks about the same thing, that the customers who are hammering you for the lowest price are also usually the highest maintenance.
Oh.
They'll make you adhere to that contract like crazy. And so not only have you given away your profit margin, now your people are going to be giving away their time to satisfy these customers.
Which is something very interesting, because every company has this, and every salesperson has this. You always have X number of customers, and it's probably 10 to 20% of your customers that you are losing a ton of money on, ton of money and resources on. You got to get rid of those customers. And people say, "Oh, I can't get rid of them. I can't, you know, the economy's not good. No. You can't afford to keep them." Because by getting rid of them, it's going to allow you more time to be prospecting for the high-value customers.
And exactly. And in a way, you're doing your competition in by allowing them to have these customers. My dad would lose contracts sometimes, but he'd say they won it at a price they cannot make a profit at, so I'm happy to let them have it.
You know what? And what's great about that is you let them have it. They stumble through it. And if it's like, and if it's in a supply business, you know, like probably like your father was in explosives, they may be trying to fulfill the contract. And what will happen is there's always those secondary needs. There's always those last-minute items. Well, guess what? Many times what I found is the person who comes in second winning the contract is in the best position to pick up all that add-in, all that add-on stuff that comes along over the course of the contract. And the margin they end up making on that is much better than the margin the person who actually won the contract gets. I've seen many, many situations where you lose the contract and make more money. Wonderful! It's a great system.
I hadn't thought of that at all, but that's so true. Even if you come in second place, that doesn't mean the end of your relationship with that lead or that prospect. They still will need auxiliary services, and if they, you know, you had a good relationship but they allowed you to bid, you still have the opportunity to earn some revenue from a contract that you lost.
Exactly, and that's one of the whole ideas behind high profit selling. Sometimes you go in with the intention that I'm not going to win this contract. I'm not going to win this contract, but what I'm going to win is I'm going to win a relationship. I'm going to win an understanding and the opportunity to be able to work with this customer again at a later time. So what happens is they go into the project, and they know you weren't the lowest price, and that's okay, that's fine. But they respect you for who you are. So guess what? You're the first person they call. You're the person they reach out to when they get into a problem. It's a wonderful way with which to build a business without becoming this low-priced person. Because once you become the low-priced person, everybody sees you as the low-priced person. And
right.
You wind up losing that profit, not just today, but forever and ever. Because not only do you lose it in your customers' eyes, but you lose it in your own mind. Because what I found, once a salesperson starts cutting their price, wow, suddenly they think they have to cut the price on everything. And then
yes. I hadn't thought of that, but that's so true. And sometimes when you work in an industry where everybody knows everybody, you lowball price one guy, you can try and get him not to tell his buddies what your price is, but you know that your price is going to get out there, and pretty soon, well, you gave Bob Smith this price, so now I want this price as well. Now you're stuck because you gave away business once. Now you're stuck maybe giving it away again.
Pricing integrity is so critical, because here's what I've found. Once you start offering variable pricing to different customers, you no longer have pricing integrity, and you lose pricing confidence. The salesperson loses confidence in the price, and they then begin to doubt. I worked for a company one time where we had different pricing for everybody, and we would wind up as salespeople spending more time trying to figure out what was supposed to be the right price. And the whole time, we're sitting there putting resources, our time, into activities that really have very low value in terms of trying to figure out what the price is that the customer is supposed to be paying. And ultimately, we wound up losing a tremendous amount of respect, business, and profit in our business.
Yes, for sure. Now, Mark, one thing that just came to mind, should the maybe in companies, should the sales manager make those decisions to walk away from a contract? Because you know how competitive salespeople are, and they'll be throwing their price in until they win that business, A, to win the business, and B, to make sure ABC company doesn't get the business from you. And so salespeople may not have the discipline that a sales manager or a VP of sales might have to say, listen, we don't want that business that badly. Let so-and-so take it. Because, you know, as I said, salespeople are so competitive, they don't like to walk away, even in the middle of a bidding war that's not going to make them money.
There always has to be a higher authority in charge, because you are so correct. I mean, I've gotten into situations where, oh, come on, I can just go with this a little bit more, just a little bit more, just a little bit more. And what we don't realize is that little bit more is pure profit that we're taking off the table. Pure, mm-hmm. You know, when we cut the price, let's not kid ourselves, what we're giving up is pure profit from the company. But, you know, it's interesting you say, should the sales manager be responsible for the thing? You know, I've seen sales managers get into competitive situations where they just sit there and give away and give away the farm, give away the farm. Hold on, folks. That's why I always say you should always have one person further upstream who is going to be the person responsible for saying, when is the point of walk away? And you've got to establish that before you get into the process. So there is credibility and respectability of your own mind when you walk away. Because you're right, salespeople are competitive. It's why we're in sales. We love competition. And
yes.
You know, what's a few more? What's a few more? We'll just come down a little more, just a little more, just a little more. No. And this is also why you really have to have the strategy developed as to what is it you want to do. Is your strategy truly win the bid? Or is your strategy purely to take the competition down to a point where they can't make any money? Or is your strategy purely to see kind of what the marketplace is doing, you know, to see, you know, who else is out there? Or is your strategy to say, hey, I just want to be able to create a relationship with this customer to potentially be able to do business with them later on down the road? But the problem is salespeople typically aren't strategic enough to be able to answer those questions and think through what is the right answer.
I hadn't thought of some of those strategies, but you're so right. At times, probably rare times or not a high percentage, but at times a company could lower their price to affect the business of their competitors, steal business away, maybe deflate the morale and finances of a competitor. But that should not be 80% of companies doing that on a regular basis.
Right.
That should be a specific strategy. And if you determine that strategy as well ahead of time, then you also have to make sure, because a salesperson, once he knows what his bottom line is, and this will maybe lead to the next question after about negotiating, but if you say that to a salesperson, this is as low as we'll go on this contract, a lot of times they'll just go right in with that low price. And so you have to have you also have to have not only the price you're going to give them, but the strategy to get to that price, not just, here's my lowest price.
Exactly, because they'll say, I'm going to give the customer really good customer service. I'm just going to give them absolutely that low price right now. You haven't given the customer anything. Right.
No, exactly.
And that's where you have to have that strategy. You have to understand, where do I come in at? What's my opening price? What can I do? And the other key piece is, anytime I move my price point, there has to be a change in the product offering. Because if there's not a change in the product offering, what does that tell the customer? It tells the customer that you were high priced. See? You know, you talk about destroying integrity. That destroys integrity right there. So, okay, I'm going to lower my price, but I have to change something in the offering. And if I don't, then the customer really begins to become skeptical, because they'll say, you know what? Hey, next time he comes in, next time Tom comes in, next time Mark comes in, I know whatever price he gives me, that's not the real price, period.
Right.
So, you know, you set yourself up for a long-term failure.
And you take it takes longer to close a sale when you have to go through 9 different negotiations because the guy knows you're always going to drop and drop and drop
right.
and drop and drop.
Right.
And I like what you said. Like my dad, if he would lower the price on a contract, he would say, well, delivery is not included. And that's going to be delivery
right.
and pickup because you can't leave explosives on a job site at the end of the day. You have to bring them back to the manufacturer. So he said, okay, now we're going to charge you 50, 60, whatever the price was, per pickup and per delivery because we lowered the price so that people would know, okay, he's not just dropping his pants, he's going to hit us somewhere else.
That's what you have to do. And that really helps you as a salesperson, especially if you're in an industry where everybody knows everybody. It really helps you to develop your level of integrity with everyone else. And what I have found is that, boy, you take the high road, and of course Napoleon Hill does such a great job of this in his book, you take the high road, and the benefits are there long term. It always,
yes.
always works, period, period.
Exactly. It always works. And then your customer has more respect for you as well. You have more respect in the industry. Because if you're always a low-price provider, you're not always very well respected in an industry. And so it's a really more professional approach to approach it the way you talk about. Now, talking about maybe you can give our listeners a few tips on becoming a better negotiator, because I know a lot of people are great salespeople. Prospecting's not too difficult. They have a great personality and all those things. But oftentimes, they're so eager to get the business that they don't follow proper negotiation techniques to get the business, get it at a good price, and retain that business. And so I know I've taken a lot of sales training courses, read a lot of books. Not a lot of them go into too much depth about negotiating. And more in this day and age and economy, you're having to negotiate. Customers don't take always your first offer and your first price. So can you give our listeners like maybe 2 or 3 tips that will help them become a better negotiator?
Well, yes, and the first one I love to share is sell first and negotiate second. Now, let me explain what I mean by this. We sell first and we negotiate second. What happens many times is that salespeople are in such a rush to try to get the sale that they go in and they make the sales presentation. It might be in person, it might be on the phone, whatever it might be. And with the first piece of resistance, they start caving into the customer. They start essentially negotiating with the customer right out of the chute. And what I'll say is this, I'm not going to negotiate with the customer until they have rejected my price offering twice. Now, let me explain what I mean by this. I want to sell first. When I'm in the selling phase with the customer, and the best way to describe the selling phase is the information gathering phase. This is where it's a relaxed environment where the customer is sharing with me, what their needs are. And this is very critical. I can't begin to negotiate until I know at least 3 critical needs or benefits that you're looking for as a customer. Needs that you have to fill or benefits that you're looking to solve. I want to have at least 3. Now, the reason is because I need to have some room with which to move. B, I need to understand what is your timeline for making a decision. There's nothing worse than negotiating with somebody who doesn't tend to make a decision for another year or two. All you've done is put all your laundry on the table, period.
Yes.
And the third thing is, I need to understand, what is the customer's price tolerance? Now, what this means by price tolerance is, what do they feel is a good value? Now, let me walk you through each of the 3 things that you can do with which to find out this type of information. First of all, the needs are the benefits. Well, this really comes down to what are the questions that you're asking? And oh, by the way, the needs and the benefits are not what you think they are. It's what the customer says they are. And this is very important. The customer has to share with you what their needs are, what the benefits are that they are looking for. That comes to the questions, okay, that you're going to ask them. But this is what's beautiful. Early on, when the conversation's in a relaxed state, the customer has gained confidence in you because up to the point that the customer does not have confidence in you, they're going to be kind of blowing smoke in your face. But once they have confidence in you, and we're still in the selling mode, the customer is going to be very truthful, very, very open with you in terms of sharing with you what they want. The problem many salespeople do is they fail to find out what the real needs are. They get into this negotiation phase, and if you're dealing with a very tough customer, they know, negotiation game on, game on. And then what they start doing is they start throwing smoke in your face, you see. So I've got to uncover those needs when it's in a relaxed state. Now, the timeline is pretty easy to get because I can just simply ask, what's your frame of, you know, what's your frame or what's your time frame for looking to make a decision, or how have you made decisions like this? And you kind of notice how I'm asking this. You can't see me, but you can kind of hear it in my tone of voice. I'm just kind of being, hey, can you share with me? It's not a threatening question. It's just kind of a
no.
But what I'm doing is I'm just trying to get the customer to share with me what is their framework. Now, again, if I ask that during the sale, during the selling phase, I get a much more honest, candid answer. In the negotiation phase, it's going to be much different. Now, price tolerance. This is really cool. This is really neat. And one of the best ways that I have found to do this is by going ahead and putting out on the table for the customer what I would refer to as my Uber package, my super package, everything that you could ever possibly dream in a package for the customer, and with a price tag that goes along with it. Now, here's what you're doing. All you're doing is you're kind of explaining it, sharing it to them, showing it to them. In fact, the example I love to use is if you go into a high-end purse store, such as Coach. If you were to go into a Coach store, and many, many women love Coach purses, and you can
my wife has one.
There you go, and you can spend an awful lot of money. What is very interesting about how they merchandise Coach purses is they will put a table, and they will put right in the middle of that table one purse. It's a Coach purse, and maybe it's $1,000, $900, $1,000, $1,200. Unbelievable price. Oh, wow. And they'll put a sign on it, $1,200. How can I ever afford that? No.
Yeah.
But then around it, they'll put other Coach purses at $299, $199, $349. You see, what it does is suddenly that $299 price is very affordable compared to the expensive one. See, it changes.
Now they're saying I can't afford not to get that
$299. Right. Like, that's hard. Right. It's a contrasting style. So what I love to do is I'll kind of put this on the table with a customer. Share this with them. And this is whether or not you're selling a product or you're selling a service. But it begins to give you a feeling and a flavor for what the customer's price tolerance, price variance is. See, when I know those things, and then they reject my price, and I want them to reject my price twice.
Right.
Then I will begin to negotiate, but only negotiate by taking an offering, by taking something out of my product offering, period, because it keeps integrity.
Nice, and it demonstrates to the prospect that there's value in and reasons for your offering. And now I really like that. The needs and benefits part, again, I'll go back to my dad. I love my dad, and he was a great salesperson. He is such a good person. And so customers would know he was truthful and honest. That was so well established in the industry that, you know, Jim will never lie to you. And so when you get to that point with a customer, they will, as you said, share their real needs with you. And salespeople can often, especially if you've been in an industry a while, you can assume the needs of a customer, but you never know. They may have a need that, wow, I never even considered that. But if you just go in with what the needs of your last 10 customers have been, you may miss one big, big need because you didn't dig deep with the customer. And the other thing that being truthful and honest and getting the client to be truthful and honest and let their guard down a little bit with you is that even when it did get into bidding for business, they would allow my dad the last bid. They would say, we'll show you the real documentation from your competitor about what their last bid is, and we will allow you to negotiate and have the last kick at the can, they called it, and he would call it have the last kick at the can. And so, again, you may have to bend your price, but if you're the right type of person, you will get that opportunity to match or equal or present last your proposal, and that can be extremely valuable, because a lot of times the customer, when my dad would do his, they would have their own blaster who would design a, you know, what he thought the project should look like, and my dad would be able to say, well, if we use a different combination of products and you design it this way, and, you know, he could put off a blast in your bedroom and you wouldn't even wake up, you know, he would be able to say, well, if you do it with these variety of products and in this pattern, you'll actually save more money and get just as good results. And that's what having that honesty and truthfulness with your customer will do. They will be honest and truthful with you, and then you can get into discussions about ways to satisfy both of you. So I really, really love that one. And then the time frame for a decision, because if they're not deciding for 6 to 8 months, the price of your product could go up, the price of the cost of your product to yourself could go up. Much can change. And at the same time, if they're deciding in the next 30 days and you have a surplus of that product that you are looking to try and get rid of at a good price, you would be able to then, okay, if you are deciding in the next few weeks, because of this inventory we have, we'll be able to do this.
Right. You know, that brings up a very interesting thing I'd love to share for a second. It's what I call the three T's of negotiation. The three T's of any negotiation are time, tactics, and trust. And if you think about it, if I have a very high level of trust with somebody, very high level of trust with somebody, there's no need for time to be of concern or tactics to be of a concern. Because there's a high level of trust. Now, sometimes
yes.
I might get into a negotiation situation where there is time. I have to have a decision by 6 p.m. today, or I have to have a decision by the end of the week. So time becomes, and then if time is of the essence, then trust is irrelevant, and so are tactics. Now, here's where I have a real concern. And this happens many times when people may be attempting to buy a car or a piece of property or something like that, and they're dealing with a salesperson that they have no relationship with, they have no trust with because they don't know the person. There's no element of time because if they make it, they don't. If they do it, they, you know, if they make the decision, they make the decision. If they don't, they don't. So what happens is the salesperson or the customer reverts to nothing but tactics. How do I use tactics to try to close the sale? You see, so what I'll find is this. A good salesperson, you want to be always aware of tactics that the customer's using against you. I want to understand their element of time. But more importantly, I want to create a high level of trust, because when I create that high level of trust, any tactics the customer uses on me, well, they're not going to use them on me because they have a high level of trust. Time is not going to be an issue. It comes down to trust. I achieve my highest profit when I have a high level of trust of the customer and the customer has a high level of trust of me. That does not mean anyone's losing on the deal. No. It means the customer's getting the highest value because they're truly understanding what the product is, what the service is, just like you described your father. He would come in and he would show them, hey, you could map out the process this way and maybe use a little different type of explosive, use a little different piece here, use a different piece there.
Mm-hmm.
And it really turned into a better project. Now, if he and the customer didn't have that level of trust, there's no way. There's no way that discussion could ever occur.
Exactly. And the more trust you have, the less tactics both you and your prospect are going to be using. You're just going to sit down and talk like friends and you know, be honest with each other and make sure you each get value out of the relationship.
Right. Because what I'll always say is this. The measurement of a good sale, the measurement of a good negotiation is when it leads to the next sale. Because both parties leave and they say, wow, you know what? We're going to make sure we do business again.
I really enjoyed the process, and I really like that salesperson.
Right. Because if every person I come in contact with, I want to be able to earn the right, the privilege, the honor, and respect to be able to come back and meet with that person again. Whether or not they buy from me or not, you know, they may choose not to buy from me. That's okay. But at least allow me to earn the right, the privilege, honor, and respect to be able to come back and meet with that person again. and that's fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So even if you lose business today, if you build that relationship, this is still a prospect in the future and will always be a prospect whenever they need something.
Exactly, which, if you think about it, comes right out of Napoleon Hill's book. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, Mark, I recently spoke on a webinar, which was kind of cool. I looked taller on a webinar. It was just a PowerPoint presentation we showed. And it was for over 200 sales reps of an RESP company, Registered Education Savings Plan. And one of the biggest challenges financial salespeople and a lot of salespeople face is finding leads. And can you give our listeners some tips on prospecting and maybe your opinion as well on quantity of leads versus quality of leads?
Wow. In fact, that was a question I was just asked the other day. Is it quantity or is it quality? And I'll say this, it is without a doubt quality. But sometimes to get to quality, it takes quantity. Now, how's that for putting it right down the middle of the road?
You sound like a politician there.
I sound like a politician there, yeah. Now, let me explain what I mean by this. One of the challenges we have is that not all prospects are created equal. Let's just kind of break this process apart here. What I mean by this, not all prospects are created equal. I, very early on in the prospecting phase, want to find out whether or not you're a prospect or a suspect. And the criteria that I use is this. If you do not share with me a piece of proprietary information, you are only a suspect. Now, think about this for a moment. If you're selling an education savings program, and I have you, and I'm talking with you on the phone, or I'm talking with you in person, and you're not willing to share with me some of the proprietary, some of your own financial, you know, some numbers out of your own financial portfolio, then I can't really view you as a prospect. I'm viewing you as a suspect. You're simply just gathering information. You may be gathering an information as to why you want to go with somebody else. I want to very early on find out a piece of proprietary information and find out your timeline for making a decision. I don't need to know your needs yet because I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you understand what your needs are. But if I can get that piece of proprietary information and a sense of a time of when you want to make a decision, then you are a high-quality prospect to me. You're the person I'm going to spend time with. Now, I'm going to keep other people in my pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Now, I'm going to keep other people in my pipeline, but I'm going to keep them in my pipeline from a marketing standpoint. What I mean marketing standpoint, I may touch you via an email. I may touch you via phone call. I may touch you via mail. But I'm not going to touch you in person because my time is my most valuable asset I have. So what I want to do is this. I want to create a process where, A, I've taken my current customers and I've broken them down into a profile. Who are these customers? What are the demographics? What are the key attributes of these customers? Okay, so that's the group I want to go after. Now, what I'm going to do, and again, I'm going to use different strategies based on different people because, in fact, I was just in a discussion this morning with a person. He was speaking at a conference and asked this question of a bunch of chief financial officers as to how they like to be approached. And he said it was amazing as he was asking them, everybody had a different method. Some preferred email, some preferred phone call, some preferred voicemail, some preferred mail, some preferred nothing. So I have to have a prospecting plan that uses everything. And what I'll say is this, I want to create what I call 6 MPM. 6 messages per month. Now, some people might say, wow, that's very aggressive. Well, it is aggressive, but here's the whole situation, and here's what I found. If I try to reach out to you and I send you a message, chances are you're not going to respond to me. I'm willing to accept that. Chances are you're not going to reach out, and you're not going to respond to me or acknowledge me until I get to message 5 and 6. But too many salespeople, what happens is, they put out a message or two, and then they simply walk away. Now, I love using voicemail. Voicemail is a great prospecting tool. But don't try to use voicemail as a way to close the sale. No. Use voicemail merely as a tool with which to introduce yourself and provide one piece of valuable information for the person. That's it. And, oh, by the way, that voicemail message should only be about 12 seconds long. you got to practice. You really have to practice. But what I found is when I'm prospecting, and this cuts across whether it be business to business, whether it be business to consumer, across all different industries, I have found this strategy to be almost universally perfect in terms of its approach. 6 messages per month. Now, it may not necessarily be per month. It might be over the span of a couple months, might even be a span over 3 months. But you really got to go 6. You got to go 6 messages. And you're going to use multiple forms of communication. You're going to use 3 forms of communication. You have to use 3. One has to be telephone, one has to be email, and chances are one's going to be direct mail. That's okay. But it's got to be 6. Don't expect any kind of a response until message 5 or 6. And, oh, by the way, that message 5 or 6 really is going to have to be directed more of a phone call type. Now, that's just kind of a very quick strategy. But I thoroughly believe, strongly believe, that I don't want to say cold calling, but what I'll say is defined calling. I don't like to use the word cold calling. I use the word defined calling. I know what my target is. I know what my group of people is. These are the defined people. These are the ones I want to go after. And I'm going to go after them, but I'm not going to go after them with so many that I can't keep in contact with them. See, this is where a lot of people make. They say, well, I'm just going to reach out, and I'm going to talk to all these people real quick this week. But then they never have the ability to follow up. Unless you can do 6 contacts, don't start, period.
Right, and plan out those 6 ahead of time. Even the book Selling to Vito, one of the books I love, Vito standing for Very Important Top Officer,
excellent
says
book.
script out about 7 voicemail messages, make them short, like 30 seconds or less for sure,
right.
And then also shows you how to script out emails and different emails at different times. And as you said, now, because in this day and age, I'm an email person. I spent so many years on the phone, I really don't enjoy talking more on the phone. And so everybody has their preference for how they're going to communicate. But if you just send me 6 of the same emails or 6 of the same voicemails, give me a call, I want to talk further, name and number, I'm going to delete that as soon as I hear your voice.
Right.
Or see the email.
It's got to have that value statement in there. And it's not your value statement. It's the customer's value statement. I will never forget, I was trying to reach out to a gentleman. He was the chief operating officer of a very major company, and I was having a hard time getting in to try to establish a relationship with him. And it was very interesting. I used Google Alerts to notify me of any time that company was in the news with something. One day I saw where they had acquired a very small startup company, very small acquisition. So what I did was I immediately fired off an email to him, the COO, and in the subject line was just the name of this company. And I wrote, congratulations, excellent to see you were able to acquire this company. And then I put in there, I would love to get time with you just to sit and talk about strategic opportunities for your company. He called me. I got my meeting. Boom.
Nice. And just a simple thing like that. You had a reason to contact him, and you were specific about the reason.
Right. And it wasn't more than about a 2-sentence email, period. But the tagline was so critical because he opened it because he saw that company's name. This was a very small company. You're right, a very small company. But when he saw it in the subject line, he opened it. And he said, this guy must know something about it. And I wound up having an excellent hour-and-a-half meeting, complete with private lunch in his office, discussing.
Wow.
And today, he's a great client of mine.
Fantastic. Mark, we have maybe 2 minutes left now. Maybe talk about different ways that people can find you. I know where to find you at your website, but also maybe they can sign up. You have a bunch of nice free resources on your website as well.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Tell them a little bit about your book and tell them to go to Amazon.
Sure. The book is High Profit Selling, Win the Sale Without Compromising on Price. It's out on Amazon. It's out on any of the major book sites. It's also in a number of bookstores around. But probably the best way is just to go out to Amazon.com. Now, you can also find out more about me. Mark Hunter, but I'm known as The Sales Hunter, The Sales Hunter. And that's my website, mm-hmm. The Sales Hunter. And we've got just a ton of information out there. We've got ebooks you can download. We got a series of webinars that we offer. We've got articles. We've got blogs. We're on LinkedIn. We have a new group on LinkedIn that's just doing absolutely terrific, great discussions. We call it High Profit Selling. It's really to support the book. And, of course, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. Yeah, I'm out there because, you know what, the Internet's a wonderful tool. That's why they call it the World Wide Web.
I'm on LinkedIn and very active on that, so I am going to look up that group. It's High Profit Selling, a LinkedIn group?
High Profit Selling. Love to have you join. Yes, yes.
And I was looking at all the free resources yesterday. Man, there's ebooks and articles and YouTube videos, and so people should definitely check that out. As my dad said, free is good. And
free is good, that's right.
If they want some free resources to help them with their sales, go to thesaleshunter.com. And please, anybody who's in sales knows the value of continuing education. And if you're not reading books on how to become a better salesperson, you're probably not going to last in the industry. So make sure to go to Amazon, look up High Profit Selling, and make sure to add it to your library, and make sure that you also are regularly reading great books on personal development and sales, because this is a profession. It's not just a job.
Terrific.
Thanks so much for your time today, Mark. I really appreciate it. And again, listeners, make sure go to thesaleshunter.com, check out those free resources, and order the book as well. Have a great day, Mark.
Tom, thank you so much, and great selling. Take care.
Thanks.